Okay, hello and good morning. So, as a quick review of yesterday, we started to speak about the deterioration process. Thank you. And we learned about which different type of the deterioration we have in concrete structure. We speak about the corrosion and corrosion due to the chloride, carbonation, and ASR, alkali-silica reaction, freeze and thaw, abrasion, and different type of the deterioration. Some of them are physical, the other is chemical, and also two type of the corrosion. So today, we are going to speak about the structural effect of corrosion, or concrete damage, sorry, not corrosion. All type of the deterioration. The question is, if we have a structure, concrete structure, which could be a bridge and or normal structure or whatever, and if we have a deterioration in some part of this structure, first, what is the effect of the corrosion on the material properties? And then the other question is how we could model the corrosion and how we could assess the deterioration, how we could assess the residual capacity of that deteriorated structure. This is two questions. To this end, we need to know the structural effect of each deterioration. What's the structural effect of ASR, if we have, for example, ASR in the structure? What happened for compressive strength? What happened for elastic modulus and different material properties? And if we know that, then we can use these material properties in appropriate tools, which the best one is a finite element tools, and then assess the residual capacity of structures. So let's start with corrosion. Yesterday we understand that we have two type of the corrosion, and we have two type of the corrosion, chloride and carbonation. And for chloride and carbonation, for corrosion, we have some structural effect. We know that if we have a corrosion in the structure, it will influence on the concrete compressive and tensile strength. We will have a crack in the structure, and we also have a spalling on the structures. It's influence on the elastic modulus. And also, we learn that we have a localized or pitting corrosion in the structures. Pitting corrosion in the structure. Pitting corrosion also could change the rebar strength. And also the other effect of the corrosion is on bond slip. I will describe all of them and show how they influence on these properties. In this figure, you can see if here is a reinforced concrete, here reinforcement, and around the reinforcement is a concrete. And there is no corrosion here. And when the corrosion starts, then we have some product around the rebar, as we already and yesterday discussed. We have a product around the rebar. And when this product increases, then they tend to increase the volume and then create a tensile strength and also crack in the structures. And this crack will continue, and at the end, we have some spalling in the concrete. some part of the concrete is removed, and then we can see the reinforcement from outside. So this is a concept of crack and spalling. When we speak about the cracking and the corrosion leads to cracking and spalling, the main reason is the corrosion product, and they would like to increase the volume and leads to cracking the structures. In addition, corrosion leads to change in the rebar strength and ductility. It is very important to know that the ductility of the rebar is a very important parameter when we speak about the concrete structures. In this graph by Al-Musallam, 2001, we have a several reinforcement rebar, and each rebar suffering different percentage of the corrosion. So start from 0 to 75% corrosion, and then the percentage means the cross section loose. So if we don't have any corrosion, you can see the elongation, which in somehow could present the ductility of the structure, is 24 millimeters. And the maximum load that rebar could suffer is more than 20 kilonewton when we apply the tensile test on the concrete under reinforcement bar. If we have a reinforcement, then we apply the tensile test, and after that would be something like this. So we have some increase in the length due to the load. So this diagram is amount of the load T against the delta elongation. So if we don't have a corrosion, you can see the elongation is around 24 millimeters, but by increasing the corrosion percentage from 1.5 and 12.6 to 75, the main characteristic, there is two characteristics will change. The first one is the maximum load from 20 reduced to 5, and the other is this distance. Here is very less ductility. And what's the effect of that? If we have a rebar which with low ductility, how its influence on the structural behavior? The influence would be when yesterday little described, when we design the structure and we, for example, assume that the compressive the yield strength of rebar is I don't know, for example, 400 megapascal. After that, it will reduce to, for example, 100. And then it could influence on the type of the failure of the structures, because we cannot use the whole capacity of the rebar, and the rebar will fail and disrupt in some parts. And then concrete is responsible to suffer the tensile force, and concrete also will be damaged. So it's important when we are going to predict the capacity of the structures, like a beam or column, then based on the percentage of the corrosion we have in the structure, we should introduce the correct ductility. If I know this structure, in this structure we have, for example, 50% corrosion, then based on this, for example, I can see that the ductility from 24 reduced, the elongation 24 reduced to 4. So if I want to model this structure, I have to consider this in my finite element simulation. If I don't do that, then the result won't be accurate. And also, I have to consider the reduction in the load. So if you want to design the structure, if you want to analyze the structure and introduce the material of the introduce the material properties for the concrete and for the steel, you have to design the, and define the stress strain graph for the steel and for the concrete. For the concrete, we know it's like that. And for the steel, if we have a corroded steel, we cannot say that it's like this. Then we should say it's like this based on the percentage of the corrosion. And it will influence a lot in our result. And if you say, okay, I just ignore the effect of the corrosion on the rebar and try to model the corroded structure, the result won't be accurate. So it's very important parameters. And the other parameters is bond strength and bond slip. What is the bond slip? We are speaking about the reinforced concrete structures. It means that the cohesion and the friction between the steel and concrete should be very high. And we say that the steel is embedded in the concrete. And when we apply the tensile force to the concrete, reinforced concrete element, we assume that both of them moved by each other. There is a completely friction between that. But this friction or bond slip between the reinforced and concrete is not fully bonded. It's not completely 100% attached to each other. There is some suggestion for bond slip behavior for normal reinforced concrete structures. But when the corrosion starts, we know that there is some material around the rebar, new product due to the corrosion. And this product influence on the friction between the concrete and rebar and reduce that bond strength. Here we show that, maybe it's better to a little speak about the bond. There's no place over there, so I have to use it. So if I have concrete and then I have rebar, there is a shear force or slip force around the rebar, and this makes the bond between the concrete and rebar. And then when we have a corrosion, the corrosion starts to make some product here or maybe in different place. And this product reduces the bond between the reinforcement and concrete. So then when I am going to model the structures, I have to have some relation between the amount of the corrosion and percentage of reduction of bond, because I don't know, and it's very difficult in the real structure. I consider and calculate the reduction in the bond and then try to model it, because I don't want to destroy the structures. So there are several experimental studies about the percentage of corrosion or corrosion level against the bond strength. You can see when we increase the corrosion level, it's from several studies in different years. All of them present that the bond strength will reduce when we increase the corrosion. And then based on that, you can introduce some suggestion. But it's not necessary to find the reduction in the bond based on the this graph. There is some suggestion in the code and in the FIB code, and you can use that based on the percentage of corrosion. You can find the reduction in the bond. And this also show, this is from the one study, it show us that again, increasing in the corrosion percentage, which would lead to reduction in the bond, and also change the bond slip behavior. So again, I would like to say that so far we understand corrosion influence on the rebar ductility, rebar strength, and bond slip behavior. So these parameters are very important in modeling and simulating the corroded structures. In addition, yesterday we speak that, and I show you this picture, that when we speak about the corrosion, we cannot say that corrosion only reduces the cross-section uniformly. We cannot, this assumption, which many people already have done that and assume that the cross-section reduction reduces uniformly could in some case won't be accurate, especially when we have a very big pit, very big localized corrosion in our model. So we need to take into consideration that corrosion could reduce high cross-section reduction and could reduce the big pit in the structure. And for us, if we speak about the effect of the corrosion and the cross-section reduction, it's important to consider the pitting corrosion also. Because you can see the uniform corrosion like this, but maybe we have some higher cross-section reduction in some part, and then we have to consider that directly or indirectly. And the question is, we understand that we have a pit, and why considering the localized corrosion is important? Why the cross-section influence on the structures? This graph is very important graph. Here you can see the average cross-section loss in the structure. It could be from 0% to 40%. And this is from several experimental study. And here is the remaining capacity of the structure. And this is for beam or slab under flexure. So we have a beam, and then we apply the corrosion to the beam, and then we measure the amount of the corrosion, and also we measure the remaining capacity due to the experimental test. The result relation between the average cross-section loss. What's the average cross-section loss? In the previous graph I show you, this uniform is average cross-section loss. If we weight the rebar before and after corrosion, and we can say that, okay, the cross-section reduced, for example, 20%. If we only consider the average cross-section loss and try to find the relation between the result, it's not easy at all, and you can see the results are completely scattered. And if I want to find the linear behavior or non-linear behavior, it's not possible. So the question is, how can I predict the residual capacity? Then, for these studies, for some of them, they present also amount of the maximum cross-section loss. They said that, for example, if the average cross-section loss is 10%, the maximum cross-section loss or localized corrosion is 50%. And then I try to find the relation between the maximum cross-section loss and the residual capacity. And it's clear that if we consider the maximum cross-section loss, the relation is much more clear, and we can make a conclusion. For example, if we have a 20% maximum or localized corrosion, then the residual capacity is around 70%. If it's 80%, it's 40%. But if I only focused on the average cross-section loss, the relation is not possible. So this shows us the importance of localized corrosion, considering the localized corrosion in the calculation. So you can have a 30-second break, and then I will continue, because in the morning and many of you are tired.
Do you have the actual failure because of corrosion?
What do you mean from actual failure?
Because
usually in the structure we don't have, in practice, we don't have only one type of the damage. Because when we have a corrosion, probably we have a horizontal, and probably the structure is overloaded. So it's a combination of the effect. So if we have a damaged or collapsed structure, I don't remember anything, but we know we have a several bridge, we have to destroy it ourselves due to the amount of the corrosion. Because all the structure, all usually monitoring and test and evaluate the amount of the corrosion or damage and say that, okay, this is time to completely destroy this before collapsing. Yeah, actually, bridge, sorry. The bridge is place of interest for us because we are a civil engineer, but there are some type of the structure as well. But we focus on the structural, much more structural and useful structure is a bridge. But we have, for example, I already show you, we have a tunnel, we have a dams, we have a road. So, but for us, the bridge, because column of the bridge usually in contact with the seawater, and the slab of the bridge contacted with the ice, and the ice are like salt and other things. So let's come back to the interesting subject, corrosion. Probably interesting. Yeah. So we understand that maximum localized corrosion is important. And this is very important, believe me. It is very important because I know there are several studies and they only assume that uniform corrosion and based on that try to predict the capacity of the structure. And when you look at the result sometimes is correct, but sometimes in case that we have a very big pit is not correct. So we have to find a way to consider the localized corrosion in finite element simulation. And the other parameters when we speak about the corrosion is interference of localized corrosion. What does it mean? The interference means negative effect. If I have a beam like this, and in this beam, assume that we have two localized corrosion. One of them is in one rebar, the other is in the other rebar. The question is there any effect, negative effect on each other when we are going to find the capacity of the structures? And the other question is, if we move the other pits and the distance of the pit, for example, being 10 centimeter, 5 centimeter, 2 centimeter, is there any effect between these two pits or not? And if there is an effect, in how distance they will influence on each other, 10 centimeter, 20 centimeter, this is the beam, and we are looking from the below side of that, it's a tensile rebar. You can see we could have a pit here and pit here, and probably we have some crack between the pits, and it will reduce the capacity of the structures, or here. So this distance is important for us. How much should be this distance if there is a negative effect, and how we should calculate that? So we know that if we are going to measure the moment capacity of the cross section, we only use the analytical method and say that in this cross section, which we can see here, in the cross section A, we have pit here, so we can reduce the amount of the steel and then calculate the moment capacity. But if there is a negative effect from the second pit outside of the cross section, how we should consider it in our analytical calculation? So,
what is a pit?
Pit is the localized corrosion, localized cross-section loose. I think yesterday I show you, let me show you in the picture. This here is the, this is a pit. Mm-hmm. In some part of the rebar we have high and strong cross-section reduction. So if, for example, I have a cross-section here and the pit is outside of the cross-section, and if I just want to use the formula to calculate this cross-section here is full, but the pit is very close to the cross-section, does it influence on the residual capacity or not? The question is that. So, here's the slide. So we are going to calculate the moment, and when we speak about the moment capacity, if there is an effect between the pits out of the cross section here or here, then we have to change the moment capacity formula. This is a subject we already focused on that, and we modified the moment capacity because there is some interference between the pits in the tensile strength. I'm not going to go through the modified and the formula and other things. Just want to give you this direction to think about. If we have a pit in the structure, then maybe it's influence on the result. And you know that usually in the case that we have a corrosion, we have a several pit in several places, not only one pit here and one pit here. Maybe we have 5 pit here and 6 pit over there. So there is a lots of interaction between the pits. After doing the nonlinear analysis and verifying with some experimental tests, we understand that LP is the distance between the pits. In this graph, you can see that LP is distance between 2 pits, this one and this one. If the LP is 0, the black point is pits. So the pits are in one direction, then we have one crack between 2 pits. And then if the pits are less than 100 millimeters or 10 centimeters, the pit distance, then we have one screw crack between the pits. So it means that pit influence on each other and then create a crack between themselves. But if we increase the pit distance more than 100, then there is no crack between this, and each pit behave individually, and then we have an individual crack at location of each pit. So it show us if the pit distance is less than 100 millimeter in this case, then there is a crack between the pits, and it influence and reduce the capacity of the structure, moment capacity of the structures. So how we should calculate is not subject of our presentation, but it's important to know that the pits, the localized corrosion, could also have a negative effect on each other and on the capacity of the structures. So, but when we speak about the finite element simulation, it's important to do some mesh control. Because what's the mesh? The mesh is this small element we have. We divided, yesterday I told you, we divided the structure to the small element, and then for each element we calculate the stress and the strain and other characteristic. So if we change the size and direction of the mesh, does it influence on the crack pattern or not? So we check the structure with different mesh direction. One of them is in this direction, the other is in the opposite direction. So you can see again, when we change the direction of the mesh in the maximum bending zone, again there is a screw crack between the pits, and the result is not related to the direction of the mesh, and it's confirmed that your finite element simulation is correct. So it's just by this graph, I just want to show you that the direction of mesh could influence on the result, and sometimes you have to check the effect of the direction of mesh in your calculation. So, and this graph and this slide, we have a plan view of a beam with 2 different rebar. As I said, the aim is considering and calculating the residual capacity of the beam when we have a cross section or localized corrosion in the beam. But the question is, usually we have more than one pit in each rebar, maybe 10 pits. So what should we do? Then we design the structures. For me, the detail of the structure is not important. I just want to show you how we could use the knowledge to find the capacity of the structure. In the first step, we assume that we have several pit in the structure. And the number and size of the pit comes from the experimental study. And in the second step, we try to calculate the capacity at location of each pit. So in different location, we should calculate the capacity. But when we are going to, for example, calculate capacity in the red line, then we have to consider the cross-section due to this pit and effect of these two pits on that cross-section. So we consider the interference effect as well. And we repeated it for all pits. And at the end, we calculate the failure, probability of failure of the structures. For this aim, we need around 3 million run, 3 million Monte Carlo simulation run. So only the concept is important. The concept is we distribute the pits along the rebar and calculate at the several location to find the probability of failure. And the conclusion is interesting. If in the case the uniform corrosion is 10%, if we only consider the uniform corrosion, the blue line, this is a probability of failure. If we only consider the uniform corrosion, the probability of failure is here. But if we consider the uniform corrosion and also model the pit in our structure, the probability of failure here is increased a lot between these two points. And this is very important. This shows us the importance of considering the pit in our calculation. And the interesting point is if we also consider the interference effect, the negative effect of each pit, then you can see that the probability of failure again increases. So this is the real probability failure of a structure. And this is the only by considering the average cross-section loss or uniform cross-section loss. So you can see the difference between the result. And I show you this calculation, which detail is not important for you, but the conclusion is important that localized corrosion in our calculation is very important parameters. So let's continue with different type of the deterioration. We have also freeze and thaw, freezing in the structures. When we speak about the freezing, then we have a volume expansion and surface scaling. So why we have a volume expansion? Yesterday we speak about the mechanism and how the water expansion influence on the cracking. So we have some crack opening, its influence on the concrete elastic modulus and influence on the concrete strengths, both tensile and compressive, and also its influence on the bond slip behavior. But the percentage and the way of the influence is different from the corrosion. In this graph, you can see here that the effect of the freeze and thaw cycle. What's the freeze and thaw cycle? Told you, usually when we speak about the freezing, the problem is not only freezing. The problem is it's freeze and then the temperature increase. And again, in the, for example, at night it's freezing, in the morning it's temperature is higher than zero. So we have a cycle of freeze and thaw. So it's important to consider the number of the freeze and thaw cycle from 0 to, for example, 120, and its effect on the of the elastic modulus of the structure. So clear that by increasing the number of the freeze and thaw, then we have the strong reduction in the ductility. For example, when the freeze and thaw is we have a 20 cycle of the freeze and thaw, the around the remaining dynamic modulus is around 80%. So It's important, again, if we want to model the freeze on top, considering its effect on the modulus. The other parameters which freeze on top could influence on that is concrete strength. This graph shows us the number of the freeze on top from 0 to 50 and its effect on the compressive strength. And you can see the compressive strength reduced from 30 megapascal to 20 megapascal. It's the same, this reduction is the same for tensile strength. And the tensile strength reduced from 4 to 2.5 or 2.6. And the number of the freeze and thaw cycle is not very high, it's around 50. So the effect is very high. And then when you, for example, assume that the structure should suffer 30 megapascal, and suddenly after some freeze and thaw cycle reduced to 20, it will influence a lot in the capacity and behavior and type of the failure of the structures. So this is important, and this study is from the Chalmers University, and they are focusing on the freeze and thaw cycle, and it's continue, and every day they do some new research on this direction. And here is a relation between the compressive strength and tensile strength in the concrete when we have a damaged structures. So based on the several study, and then you can suggest the formula, the ratio between the concrete compressive strength and tensile strength. So the detail of this graph is not very important, but just to know that there is a relation, and it's possible to find the relation between the compressive and tensile strength. Questions so far? So let's continue to other graph. This graph shows us the effect of the freeze and thaw on the bond slip. If you look at the right graph, you can see again, and it's clear in the graph, that number of the freeze and thaw reduce the bond strength in the reinforced concrete element. So the bond strength, like in the corrosion also, we have the same reduction, not the percentage, but this increasing the amount of the corrosion will reduce the bond strength. And here in the freeze and thaw cycle, again, we have a reduction in the bond slip. And also it's influence on the bond slip behavior. This is a bond slip behavior of the concrete, reinforced concrete. But by increasing the number of the cycle and damage, the behavior generally reduces, not only the strength, the peak point is the strength, but all part of the bond slip behavior also reduces. So a structural effect of ASR. Maybe you should have a break and then we can continue in the next hour. Okay. So let's come back to the ASR. Effect of ASR on the structures. So when we speak about the ASR, the first effect is crack. So we said that we have a network cracking or crack map in the ASR, and they follow the location of the rebar. And you can see here in the column, they follow the longitudinal and stirrup around the column. Also, we have an anisotropic behavior, which I will speak more about that. What's the anisotropic behavior? And its influence on the concrete strength and Young modulus, like two other deterioration we already spoke about. And one of the signs we already speak that by the crack map, we could distinguish the problem of the ASR. But it's not always like map. Sometimes maybe you have a different type of the crack, shape of the crack. But you need to do some tests and check the material properties to understand is it due to the ASR or other type of the problem. So when we speak about the ASR, the effect of the expansion due to the ASR in direction parallel to the casting is higher, 1.3 or 2.8 higher than in perpendicular to casting condition. What does it mean? It means that if we have a concrete and in this direction we cast the concrete, put the concrete, and in direction of the casting, the expansion is higher than the perpendicular direction. And here you can see in this graph, the first line is the expansion in the direction of the casting, but the black line is in the perpendicular direction. So this is important, and this makes the simulation of concrete ASR in the concrete a little difficult, because if we have a sample like this, the expansion in this direction is different from expansion in other direction if you put the concrete in this area. So recently they started to simulate the concrete, the ASR, and considering this anisotropic expansion in the finite element simulation in Netherlands, and also one of my PhD students start to do this in the NTNU. So but it's not easy at all, and it's a very difficult situation to model that, and we need to do lots of simplification in our finite element simulation. So, and you can see here anisotropic strength property due to the casting direction, influence on the anisotropic cracking and anisotropic expansion, because the tensile strength is also different in the different direction, and its influence on the crack and expansion. So here the effect of the expansion or ASR or expansion due to the ASR presented in the horizontal direction, and here you can see the Young modulus and tensile strength. Both of them, by increasing the expansion in the concrete, will reduce. While this reduction in the Young modulus is higher than reduction in the tensile strength. But anyway, both of them are comprehensive, and it's around 50% or maybe more than 50% reduction in the tensile strength and very high reduction in Young modulus. So this also should consider in the calculation and in the prediction and modeling of the ASR problem in the concrete structures. And the compressive strength. And by increasing the expansion or strength due to the ASR, the compressive strength will reduce. But the compressive strength is less affected by ASR than the Young modulus or tensile stress. Because you can see that the tensile strength reduce higher than, more than 60% But here, after very high expansion, we have that. But in the first time of the expansion, the behavior is not clear for the concrete. Some parts increase and some parts reduce. So a little complicated and not clear what's the effect of the expansion on the concrete. In some sample, it's increase, and in some sample, it's reduce. So this complicated behavior of the ASR and its effect on the compressive strength also is one of the problem and one of the difficulties of model the ASR in the finite element and predict the behavior. So we have a different type of the crack due to the all of this deterioration, which we select to speak about some of them. We have a different type of the crack, and here is not very accurate, but try to present the different type of the crack due to the different problems. So here you can see if we have, we increase the load on the slab, we have this type of the crack in the slab, in the surface of the slab. And here this type of the crack is due to the shrinkage, and the crack due to the shrinkage also could be like a map crack as well. And here is the result of sulfate, which we have some spalling, and most of them would be spalling in the surface. And here is the aggregate with alkaline, because we have some crack around the aggregate, because aggregate start to react with the cement paste. And here is a crack parallel to the rebar. It could be due to the corrosion, or could also be due to the alkali reaction. And if we want to speak about the different type of the crack, a structural crack, then it's important to know that we have shear crack. Shear crack is usually near the support, because near the support we have a higher shear force, and in the mid span we have a bending, higher bending force when we have a load here. So the shear crack is usually skew, and then you can distinguish by the direction of the crack and location of the crack, the type of the crack. And this also could be a kind of the shear crack. And here in the mid span, we have a bending crack, which is usually vertical crack in the mid span when we have a maximum bending zone. And this crack is due to the not having enough cover. And it's clear that it's very close to the cover. And this is a corrosion cracking, follow the rebar, because around the rebar we have a product of the corrosion, and this product of the corrosion would like to crack in the around the rebar. And this is a compression failure. For example, if we have a not enough rebar, we have a strong rebar, and then a strong rebar won't yield, and suddenly compression in the concrete will happen, and it's like a move in the concrete, which is not favorable for us. So just familiar with this type of the crack. It's not 100% correct. It could be, for example, for this one we could have a different type of that. But if you have a general overview, then you can see and then decide which type of the test you have to do to distinguish the problem. So what have we learned? We learned about the deterioration effect, and then we learned the concept and mechanism of the deterioration already, and it's the effect of the deterioration in the material properties, in the geometries, rebar cross section, cover, and other part. And also we learn about the crack, how it's influenced on the crack, and bound slip behavior. So it's the general information, which it's not very in detail, but it's really good for you to at this level have some knowledge about this and have a good overview of that. And later, if you need to should increase some knowledge in one of them, then you can go and read more and go through that. But always having the general overview of the subject is really useful. But the question is, if in the case we have this type of the structure, how we should behave and how we should assess and distinguish the type of the structure in the real case? So we already speak that we have a three-step monitoring and destructive and destructive test. I'm not going to speak about the test because I know you already are familiar, and we also a little speak about the monitoring. I'm going to a quick review on the monitoring and what we already learned. In the monitoring, we told that if we have a structure with different type of the problem in the column, in the slab, and under the slab, due to the displacement, crack, and other type of the problem, deflection, settlement, then we need to, in the first step, do some monitoring. And for monitoring, we had different strategies, short-term monitoring and long-term monitoring due to the type of the problem. And also, we have a global monitoring for whole structure or local monitoring. And for the due to the effect of the load, it could be static or dynamic monitoring. This table show us for different type of the problem. For example, in this case, it could be corrosion, crack width, crack detection and location, inclination, rotation, displacement, and foundation settlement. So we could use the different strategy for monitoring. This would help us. For example, for corrosion, we should do the local monitoring, and depend on the corrosion, we could make a decision. It should be short-term or long-term monitoring. And also, it's a static load, it's not dynamic load. And here is a suitable sensor we can use for that, which is not part of this presentation. But why I present this? Because the first step of assessing the structure is monitoring. So you, based on your knowledge, should understand that which part of the structure we need to get the data, because we cannot, for example, put the install the monitor in very big structure, in whole structure. It would be expensive. If we have a problem in one small part, then we should make a decision, okay, we need the local monitoring, and the time of the monitoring is also important. So based on that, we will get some information from the problem. It could be ASR, corrosion, or whatever. So we will have some information about the material properties and about the level of the corrosion, the level of the deterioration. And then for assessment of the structure, we have two different methods. The first method is using the finite element method, and the other is probabilistic method. And also there are some different methods which is not subject of today's presentation. So you are a little familiar, we already speak about that, what's the finite element method, and in the probabilistic method, why we need the probabilistic method. I will tell you if I have enough time, but let's go through the finite element method. When we speak about the assessment of the structure, assume that we have this bridge, and in this bridge there is a small place of that, which could be a short beam. And at that place, we understand there is some problem. After the monitoring, we understand there is some problem here. And then we need to simplify it, like, for example, simply supported beam, which we have a problem on that. And then we need some test and find the problem and again make it smaller and more accurate to find the information and find the type of the problems. For example, if you have a corrosion here, in this case, corrosion here, then we should find the corrosion and then loss of diameters, how many rebar cross section we have, and the rebar is failed or not, and then it's influence on the failure of beam or not. And if it's influence on this beam, it's this segment or this part of the bridge will fail or not. And if it's fail, it's influence on the whole bridge or not. So it's a start from a small point and then continue to whole bridge. So as you can see, it's not easy job. So maybe this problem is not only due to the corrosion, it could be due to the other type of the problem as well. And maybe we have some problem in different part of the bridge. So it's a combination of the problem. So you should have some good instruction for that. So the summarize of that is, first we have to find the deterioration problem in different location, and then after the finding the deterioration, it's a corrosion, ASR, frost damage, or due to the overloading or whatever, find the input parameters we need for finite element. Which parameters we need? We need changing in the material strength, and then to find the material strength, we need to do some test and have some sample to find the material strength. And then find the location of the crack, size of the crack, and where we have a crack in the structure. Changing the geometry, rebar cross-section loose, cover loose, and other geometry change. And also we need to find the bond slip, reduction in the bond slip, if we have a reinforced concrete element. So all of these input parameters should gathered and as input when we send it to the finite element method. Sorry. It's time to waking up. So. So we should use this as input parameters in the finite element tools. And what's the finite element tools? It's a different software. It could be, for example, Diana, it could be Abacus, ANSYS, and we have several software which we could use as a finite element device. And then we do some analysis, and type of the analysis depends on the type of the structure, which type of the analysis we have. And then we can assess the structure after applying the deterioration damage. So let's go through the case study and see how they assess the structures. So we have selected multi-spam RC bridge, and then it's 80 years old, and the problem is we have a severe crack in the concrete. And they focused on this zone. As I said, we have to select the much more critical zone and focused on that. And in this zone, they used the 2D finite element simulation. And 2D finite element simulation, the software was Diana. Why Diana? Generally knows that Diana is the name of the software, and in the Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Netherlands, they use it. And it's a very strong software to modeling the concrete structures. So in the NTNU, in the research group for betting for concrete, they use the Diana. So because of that Diana, you can see Diana in several slides. It's very favorable in Norway and some other countries. So and then due to the field inspection monitoring, they find the central crack in the middle region and also find the shear crack near the support. You can see there's some screw crack here and some central crack, some bending crack in the middle. So we have a shear crack and we have a central crack and again shear crack in the support. So it's modeled and all the information gathered, which is I'm not presented here, but it's modeled, and then in the Diana they try to find and assess the behavior after modeling the problems. Here we can see the effect of by having the bending crack, and here by having the shear crack. And the blue model is the load deflection without crack here and here, and this one increasing the size of the bending crack, the length of the bending crack. And you can see by increasing the bending crack, the deflection, the residual capacity reduced from 4 to 3, the ultimate capacity. And then they can predict, okay, if the size of the bending crack is like this, then you should know that the capacity of the structure reduced from that point to this point. And for the shear crack, it's much more critical. If we don't have a crack, it's here. But if we increase the length of the shear crack, you can see this completely, we have a big problem and high, strong reduction in the capacity of the structure from 4 to 1. And it's also change of type of the failure. We have a flexural failure. It means that the rebar will yield and then concrete destroyed. But when we have a high and big size of the shear crack, then we have a shear failure. So size of the crack, shear crack, could change the failure type as well. So it's not important to learn all of the detail. I just want to show you how we could implement finite element simulation and predict the capacity of the structures. So different size of the crack presented here, and effect of the bending crack presented here, and different size of the shear crack presented here, and its effect on the whole behavior of the span presented here. And if you look at the whole structures, you can say that, okay, if we have a big shear crack here, then we will have some problem, critical problem here, and its influence on the whole structure which we have here. If it's failed here, then we will have a big problem here. So we have to do some repair in this area if we want to have a more safe structures. But again, the first step is monitoring. You have to monitor every place and do some inspection and find the problem and location of the problem. But the question is, when we use the finite element analyzers, and speak about the finite element analyzers, we say that in the finite element analyzers, for example, we have a problem in the corrosion, and in the corrosion, the yield strength reduced from 500 MPa to 400 MPa. But the question is, in whole structure, in different place, the properties is not identical, is not same. Maybe in some part, the yield strength is different from this part, or concrete compressive behavior is different from location to different location. So if we want to use the finite element analyzers, the finite element analyzers maybe won't be accurate or maybe different from the real case, because it's very difficult in the finite element analyzers. For example, we say that the concrete cover is 5 centimeters. But maybe in some part it's 2 centimeters, in some part 4 centimeters, because in the practice it's different. So how we should consider this changing in the geometry, material, and other properties? It's variable parameters. So we need to change the type of the analysis, not just focused on the finite element simulation. We need to go through the probabilistic analysis. What is the probabilistic analysis? In the probabilistic analysis, we consider the effect of the variation in the parameters. These parameters could be geometry, size of the rebar, size of the concrete element, or could be material properties. We define the distribution for that. For example, we said that if it's the FSC, then the distribution of FSC is like this. The majority of FSC should be, for example, 30 MPa, but in some cases it's less than, for example, 5% is less than 30 MPa, and 5% is higher than 30 MPa. And then we consider this variation for all parameters, for cover, for properties, in our calculation in the finite, in the probabilistic analysis. So probability method is another method for assessment of the structure, deteriorated structures. In this method, the parameters should be analyzed and find the probability distribution. As I said, for different parameters, which could be a geometrical dimension, mechanical and chemical properties, damage and inhomogeneity in the material, especially for the concrete, because concrete is not homogeneous material. At this zone, maybe compressive strength from that zone would be different. But I assume that all of them should be 40 MPa, but in the practice, maybe here is 40 and here is 45 and over there is 35. So all of them will influence on our calculation. So then we need to find the distribution function. It's a statistical method. Said that, okay, in this structure, the distribution function, 90% of the place is 40, and in some percent it's less than 40. So we use the function and apply the function in our method to find the probability of failure of the structures. And also for the load, it could be variation for the load. And then when we speak about the probability of failure in the code, it's mentioned that if you find the probability of failure for structures, and for different range of the probability of failure, we have a reliability index. So we can say that if the probability of failure is this, the reliability index is like this. And there's a formula between these two. And so we could find the reliability index for the structure, for the element. And the reliability index in the table, for example, in the ISO or in the Eurocode, for different type of the structure, it's mentioned that the reliability index, for example, should be between 33 to 44 if the concrete, the importance of concrete is low, or high, it should be 43 to 52. So you can find it here. And for structures, the whole story is like that. I have a beam. In the beam, I have a variation of the parameters. And then I try to find the probability of failure for this beam due to the variation in the parameters. And after finding the probability of failure, then I could find the reliability index and say that, okay, the reliability index in this case is 30, for example, 9. And I check the importance of this structure and see that the 39 is in the medium, and I need it should be in the medium size. So it's a good structure and a good reliable structures. So this is another method to assessment of the structures based on the probability of failure and reliability analysis. And I will show you a simple example here. This is an 8-year-old Norwegian concrete harbor structures, and the durability requirement is based on the Norwegian code NS3420, which we learned and spoke about last week. And the problem is chloride penetration. So they started to do some samples, get some information. For example, this is for concrete cover. You can see that the average is for one of the beam is 48, for the other is 48.7, 48.3. And then they find a distribution function for that based on several sample have. Say that, okay, this is the distribution function for concrete cover. The mean distance is around 43 and 48 for two different samples. And they have done the same things for chloride ingress in the concrete, the concentration of the chloride due to the concrete cover, and find for each parameters, they find the distribution function. This is the summary of the distribution function for each parameters they have find. And then at the end, they started to do some analysis and find the probability of failure and reliability index. So they find the probability of failure and reliability index. And then you can see, for example, in this structure, the reliability index should be 1.5. And if we check that the reliability index 1.5, it's here. And it means that after 36 years, the reliability index is 1.5. So you could understand how many years you could work with this structure and when you should repair this type of the structure. So this is a summary and very quick and very fast and only surface of this method, not in detail, which is not actually, this is not place to go through the detail, but I selected to speak about this because it gives you a good overview of the current knowledge and different method. So if I just want to speak about the deterioration mechanism, you will say, okay, so what? Deterioration mechanism, the theory I can see in the different books. But if you have an overview, okay, at this stage I find the deterioration mechanism, and then I need to monitoring to find the effect, and then I can use that in the software or in the probabilistic method to assess the structures. So this is the useful information, and this information is interesting for us. And then we can use it to make a decision about the future of the structure. Only speaking about the pure material properties without using and without knowing how to use that, is it good? It's good, but it's not enough. So I decided to speak about this, to give you a good overview and how to use this knowledge in the practice. Thank you for your attention, and I'm really happy I had the opportunity to come here and present this information for you, and I hope you also enjoyed this, and I wish you be success to passing the course, all of them with getting A, hopefully. Or maybe B is good as well. So instead of just focusing, because this year you are, it's very important year, instead of just focusing on the grade, try to find your interest for future study or future work. Because this is the time you can make a decision in which direction you should continue. If you go to the direction you won't like that, it would be for whole life. And then it's influence on your quality of life. So try to at least think which direction is location of interest for you. And try to find the best way if you are interested.